from snakes.
From snakes.
Chora,
thieves.
Ogni,
fire.
Vyudhyaha,
enlightening.
Kshut,
from hunger.
Trit,
thirst.
Vyadi,
disease.
Adavihi,
and other agents.
Nripa,
O king.
Panchutvam,
death.
Richate,
obtains.
Jantuhu,
the conditioned living entity.
Mungte,
he enjoys.
Arabdha,
already created by his past work.
Karma,
the fruit of reaction.
Tat,
that.
Translation:
when a conditioned soul is killed by snakes, thieves, fire, lightning, hunger, disease, or anything else, he is experiencing the reaction to his own past work. So purport by His Divine Grace, by the servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, King Parikshit obviously was not suffering the reaction of past karma. As a great devotee, he was personally brought back home, back to Godhead, by the Lord. So, Om Gana Timidanda Shah, Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, actually, before talking about the topic of this particular verse in purport, I want to mention a little bit about the history of Takshaka, because there's actually an interesting history of why he was so angry with the whole dynasty. And this goes back to when Krishna and Arjuna were burning the Kandava forest. And this Kandava forest actually had to be burned for a variety of reasons. One reason is that Agni actually had indigestion. And the reason Agni's the fire god, in case you hadn't figured that one out, had indigestion is that there was someone doing a sacrifice for him that lasted 12 years and they were pouring ghee into the sacrifice the whole time. So if you take too much ghee, there's all sorts of diseases that occur. And in the Kandava forest has so many herbs, so we believe in herbal medicine in the Krishna consciousness movement. Also Ayurvedic, also allopathic, according to whatever works. Actually, that's the way Prabhupada was. Whatever worked, he would do. So Agni needed these herbs, and I guess he had to burn the herbs in order to digest them, because that's the way Agni eats. He's the fire. And actually, we have a fire, too, in our body, Agni. That is the fire of digestion. Prabhupada said, if you're Krishna conscious and you have a good fire digestion, you can eat anything and get all the vitamins. Prabhupada one time was talking about the whole theory of taking vitamins. You know, people take vitamin pills and everything. And Prabhupada said, if you have good fire digestion, then you can get vitamins from practically any food. So apart from that, Agni wanted to digest all the herbs in this particular forest. And this forest was protected by Indra. Indra was Takshaka's friend, as we see in this particular story too. When Maharaj Janamejaya, he wanted to kill Takshaka along with all the other serpents, and Takshaka was being protected by Indra. So Indra, so Arjuna and Krishna, they set fire to the Kandava forest. And it's described, they wouldn't let any of the living entities escape. Actually, one of the living entities took shelter of them. That was Maya Danava, who was also in the Kandava forest. Maya Danava took shelter, and Maya Danava later on built the palace in Indraprasht. And that was the palace where water appeared like land, and land appeared like water, and Duryodhana made a big mistake, and he fell into the water, and Draupadi was laughing at Duryodhana. So that's a story in the Mahabharata. So they were burning this forest, the Kandava forest. Takshaka was not in the forest, but his wife and children were in the forest. So it turns out that Krishna and Arjuna had actually, by burning the forest, they had actually killed Takshaka's wife and children. So Takshaka had this animosity towards the Pandavas. There's a little bit of back history here, okay? And so, obviously, he wanted to ultimately kill the descendant of the Pandavas, who was Parikshit Maharaj. Because that was his motivation. Of course, as we know, even though someone has a motivation, that if Krishna wants to protect someone, someone will be protected. And if Krishna wants to kill someone, in spite of the best medical help or whatever, one will die. So it was always Krishna's plan like that. And we need to see like that too. Of course, the Bhagavad Gita teaches us in the 6th chapter, text 30, Yomam Pashati Sarvachar Savam Jamayi Pashati Dasham Na Pranashami Sachame Na Pranashati, which translated is one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me is never lost to me, nor am I ever lost to him, is Bhagavad Gita. And so a devotee sees Krishna everywhere and in everything, and something happens to him, he actually understands it's Krishna's plan, like Richard Maharaj was seen like this. He doesn't blame the immediate perpetrator, as we find in the case of Dharma the Bull. This is also from the Bhagavatam, was being attacked by the personality of Kali, and Parikshit Maharaj asked him who has done this, and Dharma the Bull didn't blame Kali for it. He actually understood it was Krishna's plan. So we should see like that too. In the cases where it's not our fault, like if you jump off the building, don't say, well, it's Krishna's plan. Why didn't he save me? So you have to see that when it's Krishna's plan, which is something that's beyond your control. And then take advantage of it to become Krishna conscious. Just like my godbrother Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj, he had this cancer, melanoma cancer, which gradually took over the whole body. And instead of like either getting angry with Krishna or trying to understand, you know, karma, whatever, he understood it was Krishna's plan, and he actually took advantage of it to preach Krishna consciousness and ultimately to go back to home, back to Godhead. So Parikshit Maharaj is doing the same thing here. As far as the topic is concerned here, this is a very important topic. You have the word here, arabdha, which the devotees translate is already created by his past work. This is like an abbreviation for something called prarabdha, prarabdha karma. There's different types of, let's say, things connected to karma and karma. The word karma basically means work, but it can also mean in certain contexts the reaction to a particular work. So you have to understand the context in which the word is used. In other words, where it is used. So there's different things connected with karmic or karmic reactions and karma, the action itself. And there's described by Rupa Goswami. There's the kuta, you know, like the combination or the inclination to do things. It's actually just like the whole garden of seeds. It's like if you have a garden and there's all sorts of different seeds you've thrown into it and you don't know which is going to come first, the weeds or your plants. That's the kuta. And then the specific seed is bija. Bija is like a seed, one seed like that. So you have an inclination to sinful or pious activities. We're not only talking about sinful activities. You have the bija. It means the seed of desire. And sometimes, this is a topic Prabhupada discussed many times, it appears that we have no seeds of sinful desires because we're sleeping. Or in the case of a child, you know, a little child is born. We're not talking about devotee children, so no one get upset with me. But a little child is born, he appears so to be so cute and innocent. I'm sure that when Hiranyakashipu was born, he was cute as anything. Isn't it, you know, children are naturally adorable. Actually, practically in many species of life, the babies are much more adorable than the adults. Right? I mean, like you go to Vrindavan or Govardhan, you see these little monkeys. They're so cute. And the older ones are not cute at all. Human beings are like that too. I mean, nobody's put me on his lap recently and pinched my cheek. Actually, except on one boat that I was taking in, where was that? Oh yeah, from Helsinki to Stockholm a number of years ago. There was a drunk man, he did that with me. But apart from that, it doesn't usually happen. So, anyway, so children appear so innocent, an innocent child, but you really don't understand what the bijas, you know, the kuta and the bijas, that's there in his heart, ready to fructify as soon as you add a little water. Not water precisely, but that's analogous. As soon as you add a little age to him, he grows up, and then all of a sudden, wow. What happened to cute little Das? You know, he was chanting so nicely when he was young, and now he's just like at the bars. So it's like that story in the Krishna book when Palambasura took the form of a cowherd boy, and he had this competition with Krishna and Balaram, and basically his team lost the competition, which is Krishna's. He was on Krishna's team and he lost the competition. And he had to carry Balaram away. You know the story in the Krishna book? And so he carried Balaram on his back. So as he was carrying Balaram on his back, he transformed himself into his true nature, which is a demon. And what did Balaram say? My, how this carrier has changed. That's a quote from the Krishna book. And so when children grow up, my, how he has changed. So I'm not saying all children are like that. I mean, some children grow up and they're pure devotees or whatever. And actually, it's also important, okay, this is another important topic as far as children are concerned, nature and nurture. Someone may have those different seeds, sinful seeds in the heart, you know, the bijas. But then if they're given the proper association, those seeds can be fried before they fructify. Because Prabhupada comments that, talking about seeds, he was making reference to the seeds, the garbanzo beans or chickpeas, they were in the pyramids in Egypt, that they would uncover these pyramids and take out these garbanzo beans, and chickpeas, they're called, we call them, and they would add water and they would sprout. Amazing. After thousands of years, they would sprout, although they appeared to be dead. So, but a way, Prabhupada said, the way to keep them from sprouting is you fry them. You know, if you fry something in oil or whatever, boil it even, you kill the living entity that's in the seed. There's actually a little soul in the seed. And you kill it by, that's why even vegetarians, they get killed. When we cook something, you're killing so many living entities. But because we offer to Krishna, we're freed from the karma. But we can't offer meat, fish, eggs, or anything untouchable to Krishna. So so basically, Prabhupada said you fry the seed. So if we actually, talking about nature, if you have a child or a person who has demoniac nature, by the process of devotional service, you can fry the seed of desire and make it infertile, so it cannot fructify later on. And if you see that even in adults. I mean, practically many of us, we were born of demoniac nature. Like Prabhupada said, we were a mixed caste of unknown origin. You know, Western people, or, you know, even people in India. I mean, we're all mixed caste. Or Kalo Shudra Sambhava, but everybody in Kali Yuga is a Shudra. So that means our tendencies were most low. At least talking about myself, not about any of you. I'm sure you were all pure souls. But and then by the process of devotional service, you actually change that whole mentality. You fry the sinful seeds of desire. Of course, if you stop chanting, then there's the principle of punarmushaka bhava. That means you again become whatever, a mouse or rascal. Prabhupada talked about that too. So we have to really be careful about our sadhana, because whatever our previous propensities or whatever was before can come out when we actually stop the process of bhakti. Now, and Prabhupada also said, the problem with you Western boys and girls, you're not enough afraid of Baya. You know, we're thinking, oh, I've been chanting for so many years, I'm protected. I'm initiated, I'm protected. I'm wearing a dhoti, I'm protected. I mean, it's like when I took sannyas, I asked the devotees, what's the purpose of this cape, you know, the upper portion of the sannyasi's thing? And they said, that's to protect you from women. And I was thinking, what is it? Is this going to protect me, you know? Is something like that? Burqa or something like that? Muslims wear, you know. Obviously, what protects you is devotional, protection from Maya is devotional service. And so we really have to keep performing devotional service to keep that seed from coming up. Prabhupada also said, no, another thing about seeds. Even in the early days, when devotees started having a little hair, does anyone know what he called them? Hippie seeds. Not women, of course. But whenever the men started to have more than like 2 weeks of growth, he said, oh, the hippie seeds are growing. So Prabhupada referred to seeds in that particular case too, bija in that particular case. And of course, we also have the bhakti lata bij. And if we're not careful when we're chanting the holy names and cultivating the bhakti lata bij, then these other bijas will grow too. If we commit offenses on chanting. Like Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu compared himself to a gardener. And he says, a gardener, you have to be very careful of the weeds that sometimes appear to be the same. If you're not an expert gardener, isn't it? The weeds sometimes appear to be a plant. I was walking in our garden the other day and a devotee was asking me, well, what's this nice plant that's growing around our fig trees? And I said, it's a weed. He said, oh, I thought it was nice before. And it was choking off the fig trees. And I said, pull it out, get rid of it. So anyway, so bhakti lata bij, and then karma bij, isn't it? Jnana bij. That's another, you know, actually you have all these different seeds that you have to be careful of. Like that, of course, the bhakti lata bij is the seed of the creeper of devotion. And then also you have the seed that can develop a karma bij when you're chanting too. Karma bij means fruit of activity or wanting something within this material world, or even jnana bij. You know, one becomes very educated, you know, goes to the university, gets a PhD, and maya aprita jnana. His knowledge becomes covered by illusion. You know, he considers himself so intelligent. Oh, those devotees, they don't know anything. I'm a Sanskrit scholar. Actually, many Sanskrit scholars have spiritually died in our movement because they think themselves sometimes more intelligent than Prabhupada. They think, oh, Prabhupada didn't translate it properly, and they criticize Prabhupada, and that's it. So you have to be careful, the karma bij, the jnana bij, you know, because you can desire so many different things. In the name of devotional service, you can desire things that will lead to your profit, adoration, distinction. You say, you know, I'm an advanced devotee. I should get a fancy car. And with Guru, I should get a Tesla. Or a Maserati, or at least a Mercedes. You know, so that, you know, all these, I'm not criticizing people who have Mercedes. Maybe Maseratis, I will. But, so all these desires can arise. And actually, even Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he talks about how one of the sources of anarthas in devotional service are the byproducts of bhakti. You know, the other sources are sinful activities, pious activities, and of course offenses against the holy name, offenses against Vaishnavas, offenses. And the last source he gives is bhakti itself. Because you can actually, by performing bhakti, well, let's say you get appreciated, you may get material goods, allurements. And then you become attached to those things. And those drive you away, pull you away from devotional service. So those are the karma beads, jnana beads. You really have to be alert all the time, introspective all the time, ready to find fault with yourself. And the problem is, you know, the more you advance, there may be a tendency of becoming more proud. You know, I know so much about devotional service. I know so many Sanskrit verses. I have so many realizations. I'm a sannyasi, I'm a guru, I'm a GBC, you know, whatever. You got all the power positions in this country. And so this is danger. So we should be aware of that danger. Or I chant so nicely, or I wear my dhoti so nicely. I don't have that problem. That's one problem I don't have. I have so many wrinkles. So we're talking about the bija. And then, of course, talking about karma, then you got the kuta, bija, and then you have aparabdha karma, and then prarabdha karma. Of course, then you have the activity. And it's a cycle. According to Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it's a cycle because one thing feeds upon another thing. It's like a snake that swallows its tail. So you got the... Okay, let me explain what I mean. So you got the inclination for sinful activity, the seed for sinful activities, and then you sinful or pious activities because both are karmabandha. They bind one in this world. And then... as a result, you perform that activity, and then you get aparabdha karma, which means it's not quite there, just now coming, as they say in India. You know, you look at your horoscope, what's coming to me? Well, beware, next month, it's going to be a disaster for you. Right? You just hide in your room, and you get some jewelry, you know, one of the stones... I'm not saying you should do that, but I've seen devotees do that. They get all these stones and rings, you know, they have all the jewels and the rings and everything, because like, Saturn and whatever is your weak, happens to be your weak house, weak planet, you know, you study astrology. And then it comes next month. So that aparabdha and then prarabdha, which is mentioned here insofar as prediction, Maharaj, prarabdha. You know, if it's not prarabdha with Pariksha Maharaj, that means what you're suffering for at present. You know, disease, you know, of course, the death here, you've been bitten by a snake bird, a car accident, legal problems, ugliness. You know, these are all evidences, you know, losing one's hair. I think a lot of us have that prarabdha karma there. Not actually prarabdha karma, but anyway. So these things are all evidence of past activities that you did, and you're getting reaction for them. So, of course, on the other hand, we find Bhaktivinoda Thakur states in the Harinam Chaitamani that one should not criticize a devotee for present things that appear to be, you know, reactions for past activities. So, you know, that he says, he cautions. One doesn't criticize a devotee for past things they did, or some accidental deviation, or for even, you know, let's say if someone's suffering from disease. People do that sometimes. I've seen immature devotees do that. They criticize a devotee. Because for a devotee, getting back to the point I wanted to make, a devotee doesn't have prarabdha karma. Now, I was speaking to some astrologers, and they say, well, devotees... everyone has prarabdha karma just because you have a material body. But according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, then even namabhas chanting, this is in the Harinam Chintamani, even namabhas means like accidental, joking type chanting, you know, making fun, those Hare Krishnas. Even that type of chanting gets rid of prarabdha karma. And a proof of that is the story of Ajamil, right? Ajamil, he had a lot of karma coming, aparabdha and prarabdha. Prarabdha was there. You know, his prarabdha karma was those nice little creatures who came to get him, the Yamadutas. And I guess they have Yamadutinis, you know, Lady Yamadutas. But anyway, the Yamadutas were coming to get him. And Yamadutas are real. It's not something just, you know, in the Vedic literatures. I'll tell you one story that proves, a modern story that proves Yamadutas is real. It's not a personal encounter with the Yamadutas. Don't worry. There was one of the devotees who works for me. She was on Sankirtan. And being on Sankirtan, she meets all sorts of people. So she met morticians. Morticians are people, death, who prepare the body After you die, they put a nice smile on you. So little John looks like, or big John, he looks like he was happy. You know, sometimes you go to a funeral and looks the person in the coffin looks like he's ready to jump out of the coffin and chant Hare Krishna with you. Because they prepare the bodies in such a way. I'm sure some of you have seen that. So she was talking to the mortician. She says, you know, what sort of expression do people have when they die? And they were saying, well, generally, nowadays, they're peaceful. And she said, but what about previously, before they sedated people? You know, now, when someone dies, you usually die under sedation. Morphine, yeah. You become a drug addict. I mean, sometimes it's necessary to take morphine because, you know, you're in so much pain. You know, even I've been with devotees, you have to give them some morphine because they're in terrible pain. But, so, we're talking about non-devotees now. She asked, before they started sedating people, did they ever look like, like that? And the morticians turned white. You know, they were already white. They turned pale white, like your dhoti there, white dhoti. And they said, yes, that's how they always used to look. You know, so that's a practical story of how the Yamadut is coming. You know, obviously, if you're sedated, then you're fearful in your subtle body, but your gross body can't express it because the body is actually, you know, drugged out, obviously. So there are Yamadutas. So getting back to the story of my friend Ajamil. So Ajamil, he saw the Yamadutas. That's Prarabdha karma. They were coming to get him. And, however, right before he passed away, he was calling for his son, Narayan. And so the Vishnudutas came. And they got rid of the Prarabdha karma. They said, get out of here. You know, and then there was a whole discussion. That's all in the Bhagavatam, of course. Whole discussion between the Vishnudutas and Yamadutas. Yamadutas eventually went to Yamaraj, and Yamaraj said, don't ever go near anyone who's chanting the holy names. You know, that's also why we wear neck beads. Of course, don't worry if you're in the hospital and they ask you to take your neck beads off during an operation. I had an operation, they asked me to take off the neck beads. I said, what am I going to do if I die? I understood Krishna will protect me. So, because you have to take off neck beads if you have an operation, and your Brahmin thread too. So, in any case, that proves that Prarabdha karma is actually gone completely. So devotee is not under karma. So then you contrast with this, if you're not a pure devotee, with what Prabhupada talked about, token reaction. You know, sometimes Prabhupada would say, you're having a token reaction. You were supposed to die. Instead, you got a token reaction means you get a small punishment. You know, like a slap instead of a shot in the head. Just a little slap. So it's a token reaction. You were supposed to have something very serious. Prabhupada was in a car accident one time in Mauritius, and he used that example. He said, you know, we were supposed to pass away, but, you know, you got this reaction, token reaction from Krishna. Prabhupada actually was interesting. Prabhupada put his cane down right before the accident, which prevented him from having really serious injuries. The car was completely demolished. So, this is in the hills in Mauritius, which is one of the islands outside of India, where a lot of people from India live. So, how do you contrast my statement and Bhakti Vinod, and Bhakti Vinod Thakur's statement about Prarabdha karma being completely annihilated? Also, there's a statement in the Bhagavatam 3:33-6, I believe, about how one is chanting the holy names, and, you know, all these things get diminished or destroyed. So, and then the statement about token reaction. Well, you can justify that on both things, which appear to be contradictory, by understanding the token reaction for a devotee is administered by Krishna to remind one of one's previous activities. In other words, Krishna directly gives you a remnant. And Prabhupada also described token reactions like a fan. You know, when you unplug a fan, the fan has some momentum. It keeps spinning. And so it's still spinning. So, but it's going to slow down and stop. So token reactions are something like that. They're just like some, I guess, some momentum. It's one is description, or another thing is, but it's directly applied by Krishna, because the statement is that once someone says to Krishna, from this day forward, I'm yours, then Krishna takes charge of that person. That's really important to understand. Krishna personally takes charge, and he may give them a token reaction, which we in Krishna consciousness call purification. Of course, we do use that word purification improperly in many cases. You know, if we overeat, we get stomach ache, I'm getting purified. Or if the temple president yells at us, I'm getting purified. You know, everything, I remember in the early days, everything was purification. I am purifying you by yelling at you. You know, it's when we weren't, the old days weren't kinder and gentler. It was really tough. It was like joining the army, or the Marines, basically, and getting yelled at all the time, and purified, like that and that. Anyway, so basically, that's our understanding here. So obviously, King Parikshit was not suffering from the reactions of his past karma. It was all Krishna's arrangement. And it was actually predicted when he was born. You know, if you read the Mahabharata, it describes that when he was born, there was a horoscope, and the horoscope predicted that he would be killed by the snake bite, by Takshika. So there's a whole history behind this. And and he accepted that it was Krishna's mercy and took it as an opportunity to go back to home, back to God. And Prabhupada also said that when death comes, we should not complain and say to Krishna, I just wanted to live a little longer, I wanted to accomplish more, you know, please keep me alive artificially. You know, when it's ready to go. And that's not euthanasia. And anyway, this is another important point. Like sometimes devotees ask, like, if someone in a coma is being kept alive artificially in the hospital, what do you do? Do you keep them alive or you unplug? You unplug the artificial support. The point is, if they're brain dead and whatever, then you just unplug. Let them die natural death. Prabhupada was not very favorable towards hospitals. In the final days in Prabhupada's pastimes, he made Tumal Krishnamurti promise never to bring him to a hospital, no matter what. And then there's a story in the early days when Prabhupada had a heart attack. I'm not talking against hospitals, you know, sometimes I go to hospitals, but the best way to pass away is with the devotees and not to try to prolong your life artificially. I recently had one of my disciples, in fact, he was in the hospital and was obviously he was going to pass away. The doctors wanted to keep him. And I just said to his daughter, who's also a devotee, is this, take him home. He wants to go home. Chant 24 hours a day around him. Have the devotees chant, you know, Tulsi and Ganges water and the holy waters, and let him leave. It's time to go. It's time to go. So that's not euthanasia. That's it. And even sometimes a Vaishnava may decide to fast if they have some critical illness, you know, terminal illness. I was in Mayapur one time and there was this nice devotee lady. She was married to one of my friends and she had cancer. She was going to pass away. So she decided just to stop eating. And I would go every day and read to her from Chaitanya Charitamrita, and she was so blissful. I mean, she was effulgent and so blissful that, you know, I had to thank her for letting me read to her. You know, it was just like an ecstatic experience. And she died and went back to Godhead. You know, so there is a proper method of for a pure Vaishnava of dying like that. Generally, people to go through different stages. I don't know if anyone here has ever studied about the different stages people go through before they, you know, there's denial, there's fighting, There's thinking that one's going to survive and finally, you know, acceptance. But devotees who are really, like, focused, they don't have to go through those stages. They just, like, here, Parikshit Maharaj, or, you know, it's in the past, of course, Parikshit Maharaj didn't go through any stages of denial or fighting. He could have counteracted the whole thing. He actually had the power to counteract the whole thing. And he didn't. He just accepted, you know, it's time to go, take advantage. And of course, it's better to die in full consciousness of Krishna than to be choked up with mucus and phlegm and not be around the devotees, and, you know. Of course, we don't kill people. We don't end the life prematurely. At the same time, when it's time to go, recognize it. And it's not karma, it's Krishna's arrangement. So you can be with the devotees. The most fortunate thing is to be with the devotees at the time of death. And Parikshit Maharaj, certainly, he was with the best devotee, you know, Shukadeva Goswami. And of course, there's that story in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita that he even preached to his mother right before he passed away. Some of you may have read the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, that he actually, his mother, Uttara, asked him about the topics, and then he told this whole two stories that comprise the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. So, anyway, so these are some points. So any questions or comments about these points? Touched upon a lot of different topics. It's time to go. It's time to go. Yeah.
You had mentioned the vitamin pills. And,
yeah.
Today they say that you need to take these B12 supplements.
Yes, it's a good idea.
Is it possible to avoid it? Or...
Well, it depends what you're eating, but or it depends on your lifestyle. Let me be more specific about this. In a traditional lifestyle, because one of my interests is health and everything like that, so it's good you're asking the question. In a traditional lifestyle, you're coming in touch with the soil a lot. Like if you're a gardener, which is really nice. And when you come in touch with the soil, you actually get the B12. By gardening. Did you know that?
It's happening.
You have microbes, and also your immune system becomes better, too. You know, nowadays people grow up, many people in the cities, they grow up in a hermetically sealed environment. That means they never come in touch with microbes. And that's one reason why people have, nowadays they have all these different allergies. Like when I was young, you never heard of people dying from peanuts. But now it's quite common, isn't it? They don't allow peanuts in the airplanes anymore. And then, you know, there's stories I read that once a girl ate some peanuts and she kissed her boyfriend and he died because he was allergic to peanuts, you know. And now even some of our temples, the temples that I've been charged of, I prohibit them from using peanuts because we got people coming to the Sunday feast and we'll be responsible if they die. And people do die from peanuts. So the reason, and you know, when we were young, everybody ate peanut butter. You've heard of peanut butter before? You know, it's the most common American dish, you know, peanut butter and jelly. And because people didn't work, they got outside, you know. When we were young, of course, I didn't do too much gardening, but I was always outside playing different sports. Nowadays, the only sports people play are video games. The children, you know. That's it. You know, if they play soccer, it's, you know, it's virtual soccer. Or they watch it on the television or internet nowadays. And so they're not exposed to the same things to develop their immune system. And vitamin B12, you get that way too from the soil. It's naturally in the soil. So those of you who are doing farming don't need to take a supplement. However, if you're not doing farming, you'll probably have a deficiency. It's a main problem with many devotees. And because they don't have enough B12, as I know it's not the subject of class, but you asked me about it, they don't have enough B12, they develop problems in the nervous system, in the brain and nervous system. So I do suggest, if you're not doing gardening or in the soil, that you do take some supplement. Because we're not living a natural life. You know, natural life, city life is not natural. Prabhupada said, city is made by man, country is made by God. He was quoting an English poet who stated that. Of course, God makes everything, but city life is not natural. So, does that answer your question?
Yeah. Is it true that you can get it in the cow dung?
You get in the cow dung.
I mean, this is a stupid question, but I mean, we take cow urine.
It's a good question.
Could it be possible we could also eat, like, tiny bits of cow dung and get the B12?
Or? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you can digest it. I mean.
There's no danger of getting other things that makes one sick? From
cow dung. Cow dung is pure. Cow dung is pure. Cow dung and cow urine is pure. You bathe the deities and Panchagavya, you know. It's pure. I wouldn't take horse manure. You may be in trouble. But cow dung, I mean, there are other ways of getting it. That's true. I mean, what I do is I take a nutritional yeast supplement that has B12 in it, microbial B12 in it. So, yes, it's an important point. Devotees need to take some way or other get B12. They need to also get enough sun so they get vitamin D. In the climate here during the winter, you'll have trouble getting enough vitamin D. And I don't know how you got me started on the health discussion. Like, if you look at the UK, for example, the vitamin D deficiency diseases increase as the further north you go. There's been many studies about that. The further north you go, the more vitamin D deficiency. And of course, if you have darker skin, you're actually meant to live in more along the equator or close to the equator. And if you have lighter skin, you're meant to live like a northern or far southern regions. I mean, Krishna's arranged all these things. Krishna's arranged everything perfectly, but we travel around the world, we migrate from different places. So you have people with darker skin living up here, and they're getting vitamin D deficiency. So, because they're not able to produce as much vitamin D from the same amount of sunlight as a person with lighter skin. These are all scientific facts that have been done. Any question?
I just had a tiny comment on the cow dung, because when we bathe it into the cow dung, we take it directly. If it touches the ground, we don't use it.
Yeah.
Maybe we don't use cow dung that touches the ground, because then it can be mixed with all the other whatever. It's
Whatever is the best thing. I mean, you can just, I guess, stand behind a cow. I remember one time we wanted to do a deity bathing. We needed some cow urine. So I was running through the fields. And the cows kept running away from me. Because they saw me coming with this bucket and, waiting for them to pass urine behind them. And finally a cow benefited me with the urine. But it's kind of interesting trying to... Well, collecting the dung is easier than the urine when it comes out of the cow. But it's pure. Cow is pure. I mean, we love the cows. We should worship. I mean, Krishna worshiped the cows. You know. We should worship the cows. They're our deity, one of our deities, yes.
Gurudev, you travel a lot. And
yeah.
You go to different places with the devotees.
Yeah.
So I would like to ask a question about Bhagavatam class. What I've heard, there's, for example, in some place, they maybe give Sundays, there's Chaitanya Charitamrita lecture instead of Bhagavatam. Or in different places also, this was long time ago when I was visiting your place.
Yeah.
There was a discussion that when this part that Prabhupada had written became to the end, and then the Bhagavatam was continued by
his disciples.
So then it was decided that we stop there and start again from the first canto.
Yeah.
So there's like different styles,
opinions.
Different opinions about how to, what is like proper Bhagavatam class. Do you have a lot of more variation when you travel to different places?
That's interesting. Some places they do start right away after they finish Prabhupada's particular, but My opinion is this is Prabhupada is proud. He used to listen to his disciples give class. You know, so he'll probably be upset. My opinion, personal opinion, and I'm not absolute, the Prabhupada would be upset if we didn't continue reading the Bhagavatam. I mean, these are his servants who are simply quoting from the past acharyas. You know, they're not making up some philosophy. They're doing the same thing Prabhupada did. And to me, it's just as relishable as the purports that Prabhupada wrote, because they're loyal to the past acharyas. As far as the class on the Chaitanya Charitamrita one day a week, yeah, sometimes people do that. Sometimes they have a reading from the Chaitanya Charitamrita each day before they begin the Bhagavatam. That's another thing that people do. Sometimes they have one day a week where Prabhupada gives the Bhagavatam class.
In Helsinki,
yeah. Sometimes one day a week they'll play a tape or a video of Prabhupada giving Bhagavatam. So I think there's a variety that's allowed. I would say that we should continue reading the whole Bhagavatam. I mean, these are important parts of the Bhagavatam. You know, 11th and most of the 10th canto, and then the 11th and 12th cantos are really important, and we should take shelter. I mean, like, Krishna appreciates it when we serve his servants. So, you know, Kopi Bharata Padakamala, Dasa, 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 Anudasa. You know, serve or hear from a servant of a servant of a servant of the Lord. I mean, I sometimes like to hear from certain God brothers how they give classes, because it's enlivening. You know, there's different angles of vision. You know, some of my God brothers, like Rita Nandamaraj, for example, he has a really interesting angle of vision on many of these verses. And it's just interesting. It gives me well-rounded picture of the philosophy and the application of Krishna consciousness. So,
Also, when I was in Helsinki, we actually had quite many visitors coming regularly and giving some seminar. Like maybe 3 days seminar about some topic.
Yeah.
But we would always have the Bhagavatam class first.
Yes.
Then we would take breakfast, and then there would be seminar.
Right.
So the experience that I had in that ashram was that we never compromised the Bhagavatam class. The visitors would never come and give their seminar instead of Bhagavatam. It would always would always be part of the morning program.
The morning program. Yeah, I mean, it's a different way. Sometimes when Prabhupada was here, sometimes he would actually give a Chaitanya Charitamrita class during Bhagavatam class. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a judgment call, I would say. But, you know, generally we should hear the Bhagavatam every morning. And yeah, seminars generally, like if you're doing a seminar in Varnashram, better do the Bhagavatam first. But if you're giving a seminar in the Bhagavatam, I mean, that's a different thing. You know, let's say, you know, I'm giving a seminar on the 10th chapter of the first canto, then that can really substitute for the Bhagavatam class. So I think there can be a little leeway. It's concerned. Depends on what the seminar is, but it should always be Bhagavatam. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Opinion. I'm not speaking absolutely, you know, I'm just management opinions. Any other questions or comments? Or arguments? Or problems? Or requests? No, everyone's so quiet.
They're
Sweden, I forgot. Yeah. I thought it was in Australia.
This is not Sweden.
The spiritual world. Spiritual world. Okay, yes. There's a Finnish devotee.
So, we're talking about about trying the Sikhs.
Yeah.
By the person who was not service. And once tried, what is it exactly that comes back to his stuff? Because the seed is fried.
So. Yeah, the seed is fried, but because we're associating in this material world, especially in Kali Yuga, Manda Samanda Matyo Manda Bhagya Padrata, I mean, we're actually being bombarded by all sorts of impressions. You know, whether you go on the internet, you can't even stop it. You know, if you go on the internet, you get advertisements You know, one time you look for something, and then everybody in every company in the world knows you're looking for it, isn't it? or like Prabhupada talked about a jamil. He said in jamil's time, there was maybe one shudra embracing a sudrani, but now everywhere you go, it's like that. I mean, people are just like, you know, there's no control of the senses. I mean, one time I was in an airplane, and you know, I have a bead bag that looks pink. I got asked to go out on a date with a male steward because I had a pink bead bag. I told him I was busy. So, you know, so, I mean, it's Kali Yuga, you know, out there. And frankly, everything you look at, you know, outside of looking at the deities and the devotees, you know, it's like, it's going to create impressions in your mind, isn't it? That's why you really, like Prabhupada, when I was with Prabhupada, he would be chanting constantly the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra when he would go out in the world, even under his breath. I mean, I remember being with Prabhupada in a TV interview, and TV interviewer was asking him some question, and Prabhupada was, yeah, so my understanding and my realization is you keep this Hare Krishna mantra all the time going in your little brain. You keep you safe. Because it's an ocean of quarrels, like sharks out there. I mean, impression, anything could happen. I mean, you look, you know, I mentioned the car example, Tesla. So, you know, look at a car, I want it. Isn't it? I mean, it's just amazing. The mind, you know, chanchalai, manaha, krishna, pramati, balavadri, dam, tashaham, nigraham, manye, vayori, vashadushkaram. The mind is restless, turbulent, obstinate. It's like the wind. So many other seeds can be planted. Yeah, maybe you got rid of the 10 million seeds you had. But then you look at something, Hare Krishna. Yeah.
So would it be correct to say that a particle of seed representing a particle of samskara, that could be destroyed, but the kulta, or the general inclination towards dharma, that doesn't disappear?
There's some habits. Yeah. I wouldn't say, I would say, there's some habits, conditioning, until you become, it's conditioned response. Just like if someone hits you, a doctor hits you on your knee, you know, affects your reflexes. You ever do that? Then, like that. So you have some conditioned reflexes. And you just have to be careful. And we have so much conditioning. Until we become pure devotees, we have some tendencies. We have some anarthas. They're not fully gone. Even up to the stage of bhava, your anarthas are not absolutely gone, according to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Because we have Bhart Maharaj, who was on the stage of bhava. He had no anarthas, but they weren't absolutely gone, so they could creep back in. And then he got that anartha of thinking himself the protector of the little baby deer. Because of that, you know, became a little cute little deer. Krishna conscious deer. So I think it's a matter of being cautious. Like Prabhupada said, razor's edge, it's another example Prabhupada gave. Prabhupada was referring to straight razors. Not safety razors. You know, nowadays we have these safety razors. You shave yourself. All right, maybe I nick myself. No, no. You just go like this, and get off all the whiskers. And maybe you cut yourself a little bit. But in the old days, they had this straight razor. You know, if you did that, you'd be dead. I remember going to the barber shop when I was young. They had a straight razor, and I just, oh my God, you can cut my ear off if he slips. So that's like dealing in the material world. It's like dealing with a straight razor. It's very dangerous. And so I've come to the conclusion all the time, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. At least be thinking about that in your mind. Like when I go to sleep at night, I try to, in my mind, chant myself to sleep. I don't count sheep. Because if I do, You know, if I died at night, I'd become a sheep. I could count cows. That's not a bad thing. You know, imagine that. Count your money while you're sleeping or something. So instead, you know, I just, in my mind, Hare Krishna, and then you fall asleep. It's like Bhagavatam class, you fall asleep very easily. So you chant. But it's a nice way of taking rest at night. It's very relaxing, you know, in your mind. And you got to train your mind to chant, not just externally. You know, many times we chant externally and we're not, our mind is not chanting. Because devotional service is supposed to be executed with the subtle body, with the mind. So that's really important. So you chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And you'll see that you'll have nice Krishna conscious dreams. Instead, sometimes we'd like to go to sleep looking at the news on our mobile phones. No wonder you have dreams about Donald Trump or something in the middle of the night. I did that once. I mean, I've done that again. But anyway, I have to be honest. And I dreamt that I was working with or for him in the White House. I actually had that dream at night, you know. You know, what a horrible nightmare. So you got to, you know, we got to be really Krishna conscious. We got to be attentive all day long, you know, and night long too. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. No, it's really nice, the Hare Krishna mantra. You just keep it in your mind. I saw Prabhupada did that. Prabhupada was like that. And he'd wake up in the morning, the first thing, of course Prabhupada didn't sleep, but we got up in the morning, first thing, Hare Krishna. Not, where am I? You know, people get up in the morning, oh. They look like the blob or something. Kabunda. For the Ramayana, you know, big mouth and blob. Anyway, so any other questions? Yes?
Yes, Maharaj. You were speaking about the chanting the Hare Krishna removes all karma. I don't know if this is a little outside of your class, probably. We see, I think, the change. When I joined this movement, we were given service, and we were given sadhana and sankirtan, and it's like, it wasn't really so much outside of that.
Yeah.
And now devotees are sometimes stressing the dharmas and the vanashram. And of course, it's Krishna's system for society.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But sometimes it seems that kind of part of that means kind of forgetting that we get rid of our karma and then we become so focused. And isn't there a risk that drags, takes us away from it? Because I'm thinking to benefit people in general, to benefit the weaker devotees, but I mean it would be so much harder to be strict with your Varnashram Dharma than to just get
yeah.
into Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, there's a problem with too much emphasis on Varnashram Dharma. The way I explain it, I mean, and like I said, I'm not speaking from the absolute platform. The way I explain it is that we all have a psychophysical nature. Just engage in Krishna service according to your psychophysical nature. I think for the internal devotees, we don't really need to designate people as Brahman Kshatriyas, Vaishnavas, and Shudras. It's just like, what do you like to do? Like our society likes gardening. I don't have to say that she's a Vaishya. It doesn't make sense. She's a devotee who likes gardening. So as far as myself, I just like to engage according to my... And Prabhupada said that spiritual master's duty is to engage the disciple according to his psychophysical nature. Not necessarily to designate the devotee as a Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra, or Brahman. So I know my nature is such, you know, I like to study. I don't want to think I'm a Brahman. That really would interfere with my devotional service. I like to study. I like to learn things. It really excites me, you know, not only about Krishna consciousness, but I like to learn about things I can use in Krishna service. Like right now, I'm doing an intense study of quantum mechanics, you know, science thing. And I'm engaging in Krishna service. Previously, I was studying, last year, I was studying cellular biology. Sounds like I'm in Maya. The reason, you know, and actually, I was able to to make really coherent presentations, and I still do, about how life comes from life. So I really enjoy learning a lot of different things. I mean, I know that's a Brahmin's nature. I know it's a Brahmin's nature. But I don't want to think of myself as a Brahmin. It would interfere with my Krishna consciousness. I just think that I'm engaging according to my propensities and I'm chanting Hare Krishna and doing my sadhana. It makes life too complicated if you think about Varnashram for people who are like full-time devotees. I think what you're pointing out is real, it's true. It interferes with our progress in bhakti. Yeah, but we may have to do it sometimes to set an example, set an example for society. First of all, we have to figure out how to influence society. I think that's our main challenge, is that we're sitting here with a limited bunch of people, and we don't have a lot of people that we're influencing. So we need to find ways to make bridges to society in general. And how to do that, that's really, we have to think a lot about it. How to do it, and how to put devotees in positions of government, for example. I mean, in Slovenia, which is part of my zone, we have some of the members of parliament are actually devotees, which is nice. And in America, there's this Tulsi Gabbard, who's a devotee. She's my hero. She's a really intelligent, bright, devotee, who's an initiated devotee. So, I think, first of all, I want to consider how to influence more people. Then we could start to do Varnashram. We need to bring more people and make life exciting for them, whatever they are. If someone's a gardener, let's say if someone comes to the temple here and they're a gardener, instead of saying, well, you're just a Vaishya, I'd rather say, just garden for Krishna, chant Hare Krishna. Maybe I'm wrong. I mean, I like the KISS philosophy, keep it simple, sadhu. Right? So, anyway, that's my opinion. It's not absolute. I'm not presenting, I have to preface it with like that. And so, I'm not criticizing anyone else who has any other presentation. But that's been my experience.
I think the industrialism that came 100 years ago and 150 years ago has changed the world.
It's changed society, yeah. And people are lazier than they used to be. Like in America, for example, I can't think of one farm community we have that's actually, according to the way Prabhupada wanted, simple living, high thinking. Most of the devotees who live on the farm, I don't know what is happening here, they work on the outside and they commute to the farm there. Because they don't want to live simply. Like, I remember, there's a funny story I told last night to some of the devotees. When the devotees first started this community called New Vrindavan, one of the first things that they bought was a washing machine. And the problem was they had no electricity. And so they had to carry this washing machine up the hill because they were on top of a mountain or something like that. And there were four or five men, struggling to go up the hill with this big washing machine, which I had no electricity for. And Prabhupada was there, and he was laughing at them the whole time. And he made the statement, Ugra Karma. So I think there's a vision of, independent. It's almost impossible to be independent from the rest of society. Because here you got to pay, even here you got to pay taxes, there's so many things that you have to interact with society. However, we can set an example of living more simply than the rest of people do in the society, and how one can live naturally and be a healthy life. I mean, there's all sorts of reasons for doing that, but I hesitate to just start designating people. So, yeah. Yes, your question.
Yeah, it is about this Varnashrama topic. As I have read from the book by this Hare Krishna Dasi, he collected all these messages where Prabhupada speaks about Varnashrama. That Prabhupada, by making research, they found out that Srila Prabhupada was changing his opinion.
As they went around,
went
along.
Yeah. In the beginning of his preaching, he thought that
no one actually
forget about
Vinashana. Yeah.
But then gradually he changed his mind when he saw how things were developing.
Mm-hmm.
And then just about a year before he left, he gave some lecture in my
About
the Prabhupada on Valentine, because he gave it on the 14th of February. Where he, but I think it is pretty much what you said, we should not get too much into it. But there must be some point in it.
Yeah.
Prabhupada took it up, or gave it as a mission that we should
institute it.
Get it into Vanishnagar because of including
more people.
Persons. Yeah. So one has to have some kind of clear vision that, not that we start getting completely into Vanishnagar. It's not our main mission, but obviously there is some point into understand certain principles.
Yeah. Yeah, I think another impetus that Prabhupada had in one institute, Varnashram, was that many devotees weren't able to stick to the sadhana process. And he wanted some way to keep everyone within the fold of Krishna consciousness. You know, so it's, you know, if someone can't be a regular sadhaka, you know, like that, then it's not that it's an all or nothing thing. So in the beginning, Prabhupada had very high expectations for us, and in many cases we didn't live up to his expectations. I mean, look at the Gurukulas, for example. Prabhupada had very high expectations, and the devotees just weren't able to be like, they had too many anarthas or whatever to live up to Prabhupada's expectations. Prabhupada gave many people sannyas. And you look at all the sannyasis that Prabhupada made, how many of them are still here in the movement today? Besides the ones who passed away, but I mean, very few. Prabhupada, in the beginning, arranged marriages, and those marriages broke up. You know, at a certain point, Prabhupada said, no more marriages. And when I was around, I remember Prabhupada saying, no more marriages in ISKCON, or he couldn't certify the marriages. So there was, you know, Prabhupada really expected that people would stick to their promises. Let's say that. I remember Prabhupada being very disappointed when people broke their initiation promises. Prabhupada said, if one can't keep their promises, they're not even a gentleman. What to speak of a devotee. So, because Prabhupada came from a very high-class culture where someone would always fulfill, or you know, generally, I'm sure there were exceptions, fulfill their particular obligations. Like children were faithful to the parents. You know, you have to understand the background Prabhupada came from. And in the West, it's not like that. You know, so Prabhupada had these expectations. You know, first time a devotee left the movement, Prabhupada cried because he never expected that to happen. Or when someone got a divorce or left their husbands or wives and ran away with someone else, Prabhupada never expected that to happen. And dealing with us, you know, us Westerners, I think Prabhupada learned about our nature. And therefore, that's another impetus or reason for adjusting or talking more about Varnashram. And as well as engaging people in general. And, you know, I also believe Varnashram is essential. Because Prabhupada wanted it, and I see the common sense in it. But to too much involve the devotees in designations right now would be counterproductive. You know, if I just pigeonhole the devotees as Brahman, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras, it's just like, it keeps me away from this whole, what I want, at least what I experienced in the early days of the movement, is that we're all family. You understand, like brothers and sisters and everything like that, or aunts and uncles and nephews. And fathers-in-laws, not mothers-in-laws, but anyway, that's a joke. But, you know, that's the way I want to see ISKCON as a family. That's the way I experienced it in the beginning. And, of course, in the beginning, it was more of a family because everybody knew everybody else. Prabhupada was our father, and we all knew everybody. I think I was just sitting with one of my godbrothers last night, and we were talking about people we knew. It was just like good old days. What about this person? You know, he was from the UK, but, you know, I also knew everybody from the UK. It was a small society. So I would like to live in at least the central aspect of ISKCON where everybody is family. Maybe I don't know everybody. And so to think of someone, you know, I'm a Brahmin, I don't associate with Shudras or Vaishya, you know, Asasaki, she's just a Vaishya there, you know. Forget about it, you know. See you next lifetime. You know, if you're really sincere in your gardening, then next lifetime you can be a Kshatriya. It reminds me of that story in the Mahabharata about Vyasadeva was observing a worm crossing the road. Does anyone remember that story? And then the worm was going fast, and Vyasadeva said, why are you going across the road so fast? And the worm replied, worm abacha. The worm replied, because there's a cart coming, it's going to run me over and squish me. And so Vyasadeva said, don't you know, if you get squished by that worm, the next life you'll get a higher body. Next life, higher body. Soon you'll be a Shudra. Then you'll be a Vaishya, and I'll be your guru when you're a Vaishya. The next life after that, be a Kshatriya, and I'll be your guru. Next life, you'll be a Brahmin, I'll be your guru. And then after that, back to Godhead. And the worm basically said, Hari Bol. And stayed in, I'm paraphrasing the whole story, stayed in the road, allowed himself to be squished, and that's exactly what happened. So if you have that particular conception of Varnashram, it's really depressing. You know, or like, you know, in many, many times in the early days of the movement, the women were told, the best you can do with this Krishna consciousness is remain faithful to your husband so you can become a man in your next life.
Did they say that?
Yeah. Has anyone ever heard that before?
Yeah.
You've heard that. Some group has heard that. You know, some of the oldies. Sorry about that. Old. Some of the old devotees have heard that, and it's just the best you can do. That's depressing. The best you can do, you know, is become a chaste lady so you can become a man in your next life. Or like the story, we told the story also last night, that the devotees went to the Radharaman temple and talked to one of the Goswamis. He said, be nice, devotees, and the next life you can take birth in a Brahmin family and serve the deities. And when Prabhupada heard that, he said, you should go back and tell this Goswami, Kesh Goswami, that in his next life, if he's worship the deities nicely, he can take birth in the West and be a member of the Hare Krishna movement. So you get it too much into the Varnashram, it almost becomes a caste system. And that's a danger. So I see the essence of Varnashram. What is the essence of Varnashram? Is whatever your nature, engage in Krishna service. That's Varnashram. And understand, you know, you have certain duties, proclivities, propensities. Just do it. I don't think it's a big problem. Yeah.
Can I comment back a little bit? Because I've heard this before, that Prabhupada changed his mind. And I have a little bit of a problem with that statement, because I actually think Prabhupada came here, he represented Krishna, he represented Lord Chaitanya,
yeah.
And at different times he would bring up different things.
Yes.
It's a little bit like the theory of evolution, that one species become another. Well, they were all there in the concept of karma, and they become manifest when they are... And everything is still valid. It's not that we dropped the first cat,
that's,
because Prabhupada mainly translated it in India, and he didn't know. Of course he knew. He put everything in the first canto. Sorry.
No, I agree with that vision.
I always think that I don't think it's exactly correct. It's like the scholars who think this book is older than the other books because we studied the language. Yeah, but we take it from the Parampara.
Yeah.
And I don't know.
I agree. And as a Brahmin, I can accept both points of view.
Yeah.
I mean, that's right. You know, I'm more like him, a scholar. So you can actually accept two points of view at the same time when you're a scholar, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's really interesting. Whereas, anyway, I don't want to get into caste consciousness, whereas some people, one point of view is the only point of view and will kill you unless you agree with my point of view. So I accept that. I accept that, you know, Prabhupada certainly had a vision. Krishna was dictating to him like that. And He adjusted things according to time, place, and circumstance. They manifest there. So that's a valid point of view which I accept too.
Prudent.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where Prabhupada came from, there was not everybody living in the temple, they were living outside.
When Prabhupada was on the planet, everyone was living in the temple.
Yeah, well, not in India before, and now we cannot accept the whole world to move into the temple. But people, they are all unhappy in their occupation.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to work with what they are working with.
Well, maybe they need to change their occupation.
Yeah, they need.
Yeah. Yeah. They need to work according to their nature.
Yeah.
And
they can accept Krishna consciousness easier.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if people, even if someone's not a devotee, if they're working a job and they're miserable at the job, they need to make a change. I mean, what's the. What, we'll talk about that later. But anyway, I mean, what's the use of working till you're 67 and then retiring? You hate. And then when you're 67, you know, your body's not really that capable anymore. I mean, I don't see. Anyway, whatever. I mean, you gotta. I think you gotta. You start. Have to start. You know, enjoying life. You know, in a spiritual way. Your whole life. But you can transform that type of thinking if you're working a job, somehow or other by circumstances, not according to your nature, and there's no alternative. Then you you can transform that pattern of thought by thinking, I am doing this for Krishna.
Yeah.
So then you don't hate your job anymore because you're on a higher platform. The example I give sometimes is like a bank teller who works in a bank inside.
I'm actually not thinking of myself, I'm thinking of the whole society. Most people hate their jobs because they don't feel there.
Well, because they don't have a higher goal. I think there's not necessarily they hate their job, it's they find life meaningless.
Meaningless.
But if you're doing your job, even if it's a mundane job and you're giving the results to Krishna, you think about the goal, then it becomes blissful. Just like gardening.
Yeah, that's my job. That I love. I would like to be a gardener.
All right, so talk to Asasaki here. She has a place for you. Yeah.
And there was an emergency situation, and you told her, go and water the garden. And she watered there and she cried all day because she was in the wrong place. So she cried and watered Krishna's garden.
Because it's the mentality. First of all, no matter what your varna or inclination, you should be ready, if you're a devotee, to do whatever Krishna wants. I mean, we don't want to get away from that. I mean, people have this conception. If they get too much into this false ego conception, then they lose their conception of being a servant of Krishna. I mean, I'll give you a practical example. We had one devotee came from a very aristocratic family, never cleaned anything her whole life. You know, so I sent her into the kitchen to clean. Krishna's kitchen. Not my kitchen. And she was just saying, what do you think I am? And she was from Latin America. She says, I'm not a paratotus. That in Spanish, that means I'm not someone who can do anything. I never even tied my shoes when I was young.
She was proud of that.
Yeah, she had someone to tie her shoes. And I said, you know, we're Krishna's servants. I mean, we can't forget that. I mean, obviously, all day long to do something that's different in our nature, months after month, year after year, is not a good idea. But, you know, an emergency or a different circumstance, we should be ready. I mean, when I joined the movement, I had never cleaned a toilet before in my whole life. I thought that's what mothers were for. I had never cleaned my clothes. I just threw them on the ground. That's what I thought mothers were for. You know, I'd never done any of that. So first thing, I joined the movement and I was shown the toilet room to clean the toilet. And I did it because I wanted to be Krishna conscious and I experienced bliss cleaning the toilet. It's not my nature to clean toilets. And then cleaning the pots. Everybody, I think many of us have that experience. You go in the kitchen, you clean the pots. I told you, purifying the heart. Wow, I want to get purified. Never cleaned a pot in my whole life. I didn't smoke pot either, right? I mean, but I never cleaned a pot in my whole life. And there I was doing something that was different. It was opposed to my whole lifestyle. But because I had this idea, this concept, that was pleasing and purifying, it was part of devotional service, it became blissful. I think that we don't want to get away from that, isn't it? You know, so I don't know, you know. I mean, I used to grow flowers too. It's not my nature.
But Vana Shama Dhamma is for the general public. It's for the rest of the world.
Yeah, we also have to understand our nature. But, I mean, I'll give you an example. In the beginning days of Nugaloka, which is the community which you stayed at, I grew all the flowers. And I grew more than anybody else did, you know, probably. Because it was for Krishna. It's not my propensity. If you ask me otherwise, I don't want to grow flowers. I'm not a gardener. But because I understood it was for the deities, the bhakti there, it became pleasurable for me. I did it so fast, so quick, I planted like several rows a day of flowers because it was for Krishna. So I think that we don't want to get away from that concept that we want to please Krishna and Radharani and Panchatattva. But you think of who you're doing, why. Think of why you're doing what you're doing. Not what you're doing, but think of why you're doing it.
Of course, I'm doing it for necessary.
So you can be Krishna conscious, so you can proceed in devotional service. And with your job, you have plenty of time, especially she has a night job. And she can chant all night long. So as long as people understand they're doing it for Krishna, it makes work that would previously be difficult pleasurable.
But how can you get the truck driver to chant Hare Krishna then? You can drive truck for the rest of life. I hate to drive truck.
I have plenty of devotees who are truck drivers and they're happy.
Yeah.
I think we have to end now. It's time for one more question.
Different topic.
Okay, different topic.
Back to the class. Fasting, terminal illness.
Yeah.
So, what is your opinion when there is like, you know, when somebody needs to donate their organs, or devotees using the organs donated by somebody?
Okay, that's a good question. I would say, as far as donating your organs, donate them to a devotee. Because, I mean, if someone else uses your organs to do something that's sinful karmically, I wouldn't be for that. But as far as a devotee, using someone's organs to stay alive to serve Krishna, yeah. I mean, why do I buy tires for my car? Right? It's the same thing. It's the organs of my car. Yantra Rudani Maya. I mean, the car, the body is just the yantra, it's just the machine. I think we have to end.
Yes.
Yes, I mean, a devotee wants to donate their kidneys to another devotee who doesn't...
No, using some devotee's sick terminal and donate organs from someone else, can they use...
Yes, of course. Of course they can. That's why I mentioned that point before. Like Jaipataka Maharaj, he got a liver and kidneys from someone. And because of that, he's able to preach Krishna consciousness. It's just a machine. We can get parts of our machine from anybody, even from Ravana.
I just think in Sweden you have to be careful because they consider someone dead when they're brain dead, but the body is still alive, and then I think there's a risk they actually kill someone.
Well, that's not good.
And then I would feel I would take that karma and I would be very
careful. Yeah, no, we don't want that. But in many cases, someone dies through an automobile accident.
Yeah.
And the heart is stopped.
Yeah.
So that's a fine point. Okay, I think we're going to die. Well, of course, it's a Kaddish. But still, we take Prasadam. You know what? You know, people, my organs will be available unless I take prasadam.